by chasing gulls. There were houses that hadn't been there when he'd left, and the time between came home to him as he noticed the weathered silver of cedar and the thick clumps of vegetation. Growth, he thought, man's and nature's. Time didn't stand still, not even on Three Sisters. As he approached the north point of the island, he turned onto a narrow shale road, listened to his wheels crunch. The last time he'd driven this stretch, he'd had a jeep with its top off, so the air had streamed over him, and his radio had been going full blast. He had to smile at himself as he realized that while he might be in a Ferrari, he still had put the top down, and turned the stereo up to scream. "You can take the boy off the island," he murmured, then pulled off the side of the road opposite the bluffs and the house that rose from them. The house hadn't changed, he decided, and wondered how long it would take the islanders to stop referring to it as the Logan place. Two stories, it rambled over the bluff, jutting out, shooting up as if on its own whim. Someone had recently painted its shutters a dark blue to contrast with the silvered wood. The screened porch and the open decks offered stunning views of the cove and the sea. The windows were wide, the doors glass. He remembered that his room had faced the water, and how much time he'd spent staring out at it, how often its changing and unpredictable moods had reflected his own. The sea had always spoken to him. Still, the house didn't bring him any tug of sentiment or any lovely haze of nostalgia. The islanders could call it the Logan place for another decade, but it had never been Sam's. It was, in his opinion, a good property in a prime location that had been well maintained by its absentee owners. He hoped the man who owned the Land Rover parked outside it felt he'd gotten his money's worth. Dr. McAllister Book, Sam thought now, of the New York books, a man with a brilliant mind and an unusual bent. Paranormal science. Fascinating. He wondered if Book had felt like a round peg in the square hole of his family, as he himself had. Sam got out of his car, walked toward the bluff. It wasn't the house that called him, but the cove and the cave. It pleased him more than he'd expected to see a bright yellow sailboat tied to the dock below. And it was a honey, he mused, studying its lines. He'd had a boat tied there, too, for as long as he could remember. For that, at least, he felt the tug, the soft haze. Sailing had been the single real interest that father and son had shared. The best times he'd had with Thaddeus Logan, the only times there had ever been that click of kinship between them, Sam remembered, had been when they were sailing. They'd actually communicated, connected, during those hours on the water, not just as two people who happened through circumstance to occupy places in the same family, the same house, but as father and son who shared a common interest. It was good to remember that.
"Pretty, isn't she? I just got her last month."
Sam turned and, through the lenses of his shaded glasses, watched the man who had spoken walk toward him. Dressed in faded jeans and a gray sweatshirt, ragged at the hem, he was tall, with a strong, lean face shadowed by a night's growth of beard. Dark blonde hair blew in the frisky breeze, and friendly brown eyes squinted against the flash of sunlight. He had a tough, disciplined build that Sam could admit he hadn't expected from a scholarly spook hunter. He'd imagined a thin, pale, and nerdish bookworm. Instead, he thought, amused with himself, he was getting Indiana Jones.
"How's she handling the rough?" Sam asked. "Oh, like a charm."
They spent a few minutes, thumbs tucked in front pockets, admiring and talking about the boat.
"I'm Mac Book."
Mac held out a hand.
"Sam Logan."
"Thought so. Thanks for the house."
"It wasn't mine, but you're welcome."
"Come on inside, have a beer."
He hadn't intended to socialize, but the offer was so easy and unstudied that Sam found himself heading toward the house with Mac.
"Ripley around?"
"No, she's on duty this afternoon. Did you want to see her about something?"
"Absolutely not."
Mac only laughed, and after they climbed the steps to the main deck, opened the door.
"I guess that feeling's going to be mutual for a while, until it all settles in."
The deck led to the living room, Sam remembered it as being polished, full of pastels and pale watercolors. Time hadn't stood still here, either, he mused. The colors were bold and bright, the furnishings tailored for comfort. There were homey, untidy piles of newspapers, books, shoes, one of which a busy puppy was currently gnawing.
Damn it!
Mac leaped in, tripped over the unmauled mate of the sneaker, and made a grab for the other. The pup was faster, and with the shoe in his mouth, he scrambled for cover.
Mulder, give me that!
Sam angled his head as man and pup went into a little tug of war. The pup lost, but didn't look put out by it.
Mulder?
Sam asked.
Yeah, you know, X-Files guy. Ripley said she named him after me.
Her little joke. He heaved out a breath.
She's not gonna think it's a joke when she sees her shoe.
Sam crouched, and the pup, thrilled at the prospect of company, raced over to leap and lick.
Pretty dog. Golden retriever?
Yeah. We've only had him 3 weeks. He's smart and mostly housebroken, but he'll chew through rock if you don't watch him, which I wasn't.
Sighing, Mac scooped the pup up and went nose to nose.
You know who's going to take the heat for this, don't you?
The puppy wriggled in delight and licked Mac's chin. Giving up on the lecture, Mac tucked Mulder under his arm.
Beer's in the kitchen.
He led the way back, got two bottles out of the fridge. On the table sat a number of electronic devices, one of which seemed to be gutted. Idly, Sam reached over to pick one up and set off a series of beeps and blinking red lights.
Sorry.
No problem.
Mac's eyes narrowed, a speculative look.
Why don't we take these out on the deck? Unless you want to look around, you know, the old homestead and whatever.
No, thanks anyway.
But as they started back out, Sam glanced toward the stairs, imagined his room as it had been, and himself watching the sea, or watching for Mia out the window. From the second floor, a new beep sounded.
Equipment,
Mac said easily, and had to squelch the urge to dash upstairs and check readings.
I've got my lab set up in one of the extra bedrooms.
Once outside, Mac set Mulder down, and he immediately bounded down the steps and began to sniff along the yard.
Anyway,
Mac took a swig of beer, leaned on the rail.
Ripley didn't mention that you were a witch.
Sam opened his mouth, closed it again, then just shook his head.
What? Am I wearing a sign?
Energy readings.
Mac gestured toward the house.
And actually, I'd wondered about it, as I've done a lot of research on the island, the families, the bloodlines, and so on. Did you practice in New York?
Depends on your definition.
It wasn't often that Sam found himself being studied like a science experiment, or that he would have allowed it. But something about Mac appealed to him.
I've never neglected the craft, but I don't advertise either.
Makes sense. So, what do you think of the legend?
I've never considered it a legend. It's history and fact.
Exactly.
Delighted, Mac lifted his bottle in a kind of toast.
I've done a timeline, projecting the spin, you might say, of the cycle. By my calculations,
we have until September,
Sam interrupted.
No later than the equinox.
Mac nodded slowly.
Well, bingo. Welcome home, Sam.
Thanks.
He sipped his beer.
It's good to be back.
Are you going to be open to working with me?
It'd be stupid to turn down the input of an expert. I've read your books.
Yeah?
You have an open and flexible mind.
Someone else said that to me once.
Mac thought of Mia, but was tactful enough not to mention her name.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Yes, as long as I can tell you to mind your own business as an answer.
Deal. If you knew September was a kind of deadline, why did you wait so long to come back?
Sam turned his head, looked out on the cove.
It wasn't my time. This is. Now let me ask you one. In your expert opinion, with your research, your calculations, your projections, am I necessary to the Three Sisters?
I'm still working on that. I do know you're part of what's necessary to Mia's role in it, the third step.
Her acceptance of me.
When Mac frowned, drummed his fingers on the deck rail, Sam felt unease slither into his belly.
You don't agree. Her choice, when it comes, has to do with her own feelings, accepting them and what's right for her. That might mean accepting you, or it might mean resolving her emotions by rejecting you, without malice.
Matt cleared his throat.
The last step has to do with love.
I'm fully aware of that.
It doesn't require her to. It doesn't mean, in my opinion, that she'll be obliged to love you now, but that she accepts what she once felt, and that it wasn't meant. To let you go without resentment, and cherish what used to be. Anyway, it's a theory.
The hem of Sam's coat snapped in a stray gust of wind.
I don't like your theory.
I wouldn't like it either, from where you're standing. The third sister killed herself rather than face her lover's desertion. Her circle was broken, and she was alone.
I know the goddamn story. Just hear me out.
Even then, she protected the island and her bloodline and the line of her sisters, as far as she could with what she had left. But she couldn't or wouldn't save herself, couldn't or wouldn't live without the love of one man. That was her weakness and her mistake.
It was direct enough to follow. It was logical. It was maddening.
And Mia's lived without me very well.
On one level, Mac agreed. On another, and in my opinion, she's never resolved her feelings, never forgiven you or accepted. She'll have to, one way or the other, and with a whole heart. If she doesn't, she'll be vulnerable, and as the protective spell weakens, she'll lose.
And if I'd stayed away?
The logical conclusion is you weren't meant to stay away, and the presence of more magic on the island, well, it can't hurt.
He'd never thought it could, but his conversation with Mac had put doubts in his mind. He'd come back to the island with no questions about what needed to be and would be done. He would win Mia again, and once things were as they had been between them, the curse would be broken. End of story. End of story, he thought now as he walked the beach by the cove, because he hadn't wanted to look beyond it. He wanted Mia, was ready for Mia, and that was that. He'd never once entertained the notion that her not wanting him, not loving him, might be the answer. He looked toward the mouth of the cave. Maybe it was time to explore that possibility and face his ghosts. As he walked toward the cave, his heart beat too fast. He stopped, waiting until he'd controlled it, then ducked into the cave's shadows. For a moment it was filled with sound. Their voices, her laughter, the sighs of lovers, and of weeping. She'd come here to cry for him. Knowing it, feeling it, sliced him with sharp stabs of guilt. He willed them clear, then stood in the silence with only the backdrop of the surf lapping at the shore. When he'd been a boy, the cave had been Aladdin's, or a bandit's hideout, or whatever he and Zack and other friends had made it. Then he'd no longer been a boy, or not quite a boy, and it had been Mia. His legs felt weak as he moved to the far wall, knelt, and saw the words he'd carved for her. She hadn't scored them out. Until that moment, until a fist released its squeezing grip on his heart, he hadn't realized he'd been afraid she might, that she could, and if she could, that her heart would be lost to him, ever and always. He reached out, and light filled the words, seemed to drip from them like tears of gold. He felt in that light everything the boy had felt when he'd carved them, with magic and utter faith. It rocked him, staggered him, that there had been so much bursting inside that boy that the man he was could still reel from it and ache for it. The power was still there. Why would it be if it meant nothing? Was it only his will, his wish, that brought back to life what had been? They'd loved here, so wrapped up in each other that the world could have ended without them knowing or caring. They'd shared bodies and hearts and magic. He could see her now, rising above him, her hair like wildfire and her skin golden, her arms lifted as she rode them both past reason, or curled against him in sleep with her mouth curved in contentment. or sitting close while they talked, her face alight with excitement, so full of plans, so young. Was it his fate to let her go before he had her again? To be forgiven, then forgotten? The idea stabbed at him, left him shaken as he got to his feet. Unable to bear the press of memories any longer, he turned away from them and walked out of the cave. Into the sunlight, a flash like fire, where she stood, with her back to the sea. 5. For a moment he could only look at her as old memories and old needs tangled with new. Time hadn't stood still for them. She wasn't the coltish young girl who would splash headlong into the water with a dare. The woman who watched him now with cool, measuring eyes had a layer of polish and sophistication the girl had lacked. The breeze had her hair dancing in fiery spirals. That, at least, hadn't changed. She waited with every appearance of calm as he walked to her, but he neither saw nor felt any welcome.
"I wondered how long it would take you to come here."
Her voice was low, as measured as her gaze.
"I wasn't sure you'd have the nerve."
It was difficult, horribly, to speak rationally when the emotions and images from the cave still churned inside him.
"Do you ever come back here?"
"Why would I? If I want to look at the ocean, I can stand on my own cliffs. If I want the beach, it's a short walk from my store. There's nothing here to warrant the trip."
"But you're here now."
"Curiosity."
Her head tilted to the side. The dark blue stones at her ears caught the light and glinted.
"And did you satisfy your own?"
"I felt you in there. Felt us in there."
It surprised him when her lips curved, almost affectionately.
"Sex has strong energy when it's done correctly. We never had a problem in that area. As for me, well, a woman has a certain sentimental vision of the first time she gave herself to a man. I can remember that particular event fondly, even if I came to regret my choice of partner."
"I never meant to..."
He broke off, swore.
"To hurt me?"
she finished.
"Liar."
"You're right. Absolutely."
Whatever came from this point on, if he was indeed fated to lose her, he could and would be honest about this one thing.
"I did mean to hurt you, and I'd say I did a damn good job of it."
"Well, you surprise me at last."
She turned away because it hurt to look at him, to see him stand there with his back to the shadowed mouth of the cave that had been theirs, to feel the echoes of that boundless, consuming love she'd once felt for him.
A clear truth after all these years.
"Meaning to do something at 20 doesn't mean I can't and don't regret it now."
"I don't want your regrets."
"What the hell do you want, Mia?"
She watched the water tease the shore in its endless flirtation. She heard the edge in his voice, knew it as a sign of a rising and reckless mood. And it pleased her. The more unsettled he was, the more she could feel in control.
"A truth for a truth, then," she said. "I want you to suffer, to pay, and to go back to New York. Or to hell, or wherever you choose, so long as it isn't here."
She looked back over her shoulder at him, and her smile was cold as winter.
"It seems so little to ask, really."
"I mean to stay on Three Sisters."
She turned back to him. He looked dramatic, she thought. Romantic, dark and broody, full of anger and turmoil. Because of it, she indulged herself and gave him yet another push.
"For what? To run a hotel? Your father managed to run it for years without being here."
"I'm not my father."
The way he said it, that small verbal explosion triggered more memories. He'd always had to prove himself to himself, she thought. The constant internal war of Samuel Logan. She shrugged.
"Well, in any case, I imagine you'll be bored with island life soon enough and escape, as you did before. Trapped, I believe was your term. You felt trapped here, so it's just a matter of waiting you out."
"You'll have a long wait," he warned.
He hooked his hands in his pockets.
"Let's get something straight so we can avoid going around the same loop again and again. I have roots here, just as you do. The fact that you spent your 20s on island and I didn't...
doesn't change the fact that we both come from the same place. We both have businesses here, and beyond that, we have a purpose, one that goes back centuries. What happens on and to Three Sisters matters to me as much as it matters to you.
An interesting speech from someone who walked away so casually.
There was nothing casual about it,
he began.
But she had already turned her back on him, was already striding toward the bluff. Let her go, his mind ordered. Just let her go. If this is fate, it can't be beaten. Shouldn't be, for the good of the whole, fought against.
The hell with that.
The words ground between his teeth as he went after her. He grabbed her arm, spun her around so quickly their bodies collided.
There was nothing casual about it, he repeated. Nothing impulsive, nothing careless.
Is that how you justify it? She tossed back. Is that how you make it right? You left because it suited you, and you come back because it suits you, and because you're here, why not see if you can stir up some old flames?
I've been pretty restrained in that area.
He yanked his sunglasses off, threw them on the ground. His gaze was burning, blistering green.
Up till now.
He crushed his mouth to hers, let himself take, let the storm of emotions that had shadowed him since he left the cave break over both of them. If he was to be damned, he'd be damned for taking what he wanted, not for letting it go. The unique flavor of her seared through him, sizzling the nerves, smoking the senses. His arms tightened so that her long, lean body was molded to his, and against his heart, her heart kicked and galloped until the paces matched exactly. The scent of her, darker than he remembered and somehow forbidding, slithered into him, twining through his system until it was tied in knots. The memories of the girl, the reality of the woman, both blurred together and became one, became Mia. He said her name once, his lips moving against hers. Then she broke free. Her breathing was as uneven as his, and her eyes were huge, dark, unreadable. He waited to be cursed, and counted it worth the price of that one taste of heaven. But she moved to him in one quick stride, locking her arms around his neck, pressing her body to his, she took from him as he had taken from her. Her mouth was a fever, and the ache of it throbbed through her. He was the only man who'd ever brought her pain, and the only man who'd ever brought her true pleasure.
Both edges of that keen sword stabbed, and still she took. She had pushed him, plucked at the ragged threads of his temper with one underlying purpose. This, just this. Whatever the risks, whatever the price, she had to know.
She remembered the taste of him, the texture, the way it felt when his hands slid up from her waist to fist in her hair. She relived all of that now, and experienced the new. He nipped her bottom lip. Just one quick bite before his tongue slicked over the same spot to soothe and to entice. She changed the angle of the kiss, daring him to follow, to circle the slippery rim of that well of need. Someone trembled. She wasn't sure who, but it was enough to remind her that a misstep could lead to a tumble, and the fall was long. She drew back, then away. The reverberations of that mating of mouths tossed her emotions. So she knew. He was still the only one who could meet and match her passions. His voice was hoarse and far from steady when he spoke.
That proves something.
It helped somehow, knowing he was as undone as she.
Proves what, Sam? That we still have heat between us?
She waved her hand, and a duet of clear blue flames danced on her palm.
Fire is easily lit.
She curled her fingers, opened them again, and her palm was empty.
Easily extinguished.
Not so easily.
He took her hand, felt the pump of energy, and knew she felt it too.
Not so easily, Mia.
Wanting you with my body means so very little.
She drew her hand from his, looked toward the cave.
It makes me sad to be here, to remember how much more we both expected of each other, and ourselves, once.
Don't you believe in fresh starts?
He reached out to touch her hair.
We've both changed. Why not take the time to get to know each other again?
You just want to get me into bed.
Oh, yeah.
That goes without saying.
She laughed, surprising them both.
More honesty. Soon I'll be speechless.
I'd seduce you eventually, but...
Seduction's overrated, she interrupted. I'm not a jittery virgin. If I decide to sleep with you, then I'll sleep with you.
He blew out a breath.
Well, then, it so happens I have an entire hotel at my disposal.
If is the key word, she said mildly. On the occasion if becomes when, I'll let you know.
I'll stay available.
To give himself a moment to steady, he bent down to pick up his sunglasses.
But what I was going to say was that while I'd seduce you eventually, I'll settle for a friendly dinner.
I'm not interested in dating you.
She turned to walk back up the bluff to the road, and he fell into step beside her.
A civilized meal, intelligent conversation, that chance to see who we are. If you don't like calling it a date, we can call it a meeting of two of the island's prominent business owners.
Semantics don't change reality.
She stopped beside her car.
I'll think about it.
Good.
He opened the door for her, but blocked her from getting in.
Mia.
Stay with me, he wanted to say. I've missed you.
What?
He shook his head, stepped back.
Drive safe.
She went straight home, ruthlessly keeping her mind turned off as she changed into gardening clothes. Her large black cat, Isis, ribboned between her legs as she headed outside. In her greenhouse, she babied and fussed over her seedlings, selected flats to set out in the sun to help them harden off before planting later in the month. She gathered tools and set to work prepping soil. Her daffodils were already up and dancing, and the hyacinths perfumed the air. Warm weather was beginning to tease her tulips open, and soon she imagined they'd be parading in their candy colors. She had manipulated him into kissing her, Mia admitted as she turned the earth. Once a woman knew a man's buttons, she didn't forget where to push. She'd wanted him to hold her. She'd wanted to feel his mouth on hers. It wasn't a crime or a sin, or even a mistake, she thought now. She'd had to know, and now she did. There was still a charge between them. She couldn't claim it surprised her. Between the last kiss and this, no man had truly moved her. There'd been a time when she'd wondered if that part of her had simply died off, but the years had coated the wound, and she had recognized, even appreciated, her own sexuality. There had been others, interesting men, amusing men, attractive men, but none who tripped that switch inside her, opened her to that rush of feeling. She'd learned to be content without it, until now. And now what, she wondered, studying the wisteria just greening that scrambled over one of her arbors. Now she wanted, and had tested and believed, needed to believe, that she could take her pleasure on her own terms and protect her heart. She was human, wasn't she, and entitled to basic human needs? This time she would be careful. She would be calculating and in control. Better always to face a dilemma head-on than to turn your back on what wouldn't be ignored. Her wind chimes jingled, and the tune struck her as faintly mocking. She glanced over to where Isis lay sprawled in the sun, watching her.
"And what would happen if I let him drive this train?" Mia demanded. "I wouldn't be sure of the destination, would I? But if I choose the track, I choose the station."
The cat made a sound between a purr and a growl.
"So you say," Mia muttered. "I know exactly what I'm doing, and I believe I will have dinner with him. Here, on my turf."
She stabbed her garden spade into the soil.
"When I'm damn good and ready."
Isis rose, stuck her tail meaningfully in the air, then stalked over to watch the fish swim in gold flashes in the lily pond. For the next few days, Mia had too much to do to think about critical cats, or having dinner with Sam, or potentially taking him to her bed. Lulu was distracted and cranky, crankier than normal, Mia corrected. They'd squabbled twice over petty bookstore business. which forced Mia to admit she was a bit cranky herself. In any case, Nell's expansion proposal had lighted a fire under her and provided her with an outlet for the energy that had pumped through her since the moment on the bluff with Sam. She met with an architect, with a contractor, with her banker, and spent several hours running figures. It didn't please her that the contractor she wanted had already committed the bulk of his time over the next few months to Sam and his renovation of guest rooms at the Magic Inn. But she tried to take it philosophically. Sam had, damn it, gotten there first. Both the renovation and her expansion, she reminded herself, were good for the island. As the weather continued to warm, she spent her free time in the gardens at home and in the bed she'd planted behind the bookstore.
"Hey!"
Ripley wandered to the back garden of the store from the road.
"Looks nice," she commented, scanning.
"Yes, it does," Mia continued to plant. "The moon's been warm and yellow all week. We won't have another frost."
Ripley pursed her lips.
"Do you make that stuff up?"
"I'm setting in my cosmos, aren't I?"
"Whatever that means. Max got this itch to plant some stuff around the house. He's been researching the soil and the local flora and blah, blah.
I told him he should just ask you."
"He's welcome to."
"He's going to be coming into the village sometime soon to interview Lulu for his books and stuff. He can catch you then."
"All right."
"I had the weirdest dream about Lou the other night. Something to do with Mel Gibson and frogs."
Mia paused, looked up again.
"Frogs?"
"Not your lily pad variety. A big, spooky frog."
Ripley furrowed her brow, but could bring the dream back only in vague and disjointed pieces.
"Something about the stupid gargoyle thing of hers, too. Weird," she said again.
"Lulu might be interested, if Mel was naked."
"Yeah, well, anyway," Ripley stuck her hands in her pockets, shifted her feet. "Anyway, I guess you know, Logan came over to the house a few days ago."
"Yes,"
Mia said a mental charm as she set a plant.
"It's natural he'd want to see the house again."
"Maybe so, but that doesn't mean Max should let him inside and give him a damn beer. Believe me, I skinned him over that one."
"Ripley, there's no reason Max should have been rude, and no way his nature would allow him to be."
"Yeah, yeah."
Which was, she thought, just where her argument with him had ended up.
"But I don't have to like it. He's got this whole mumbo about Sam's place in the Destiny deal and your step toward holding the circle intact."
Mia's stomach clutched, but her hands remained steady as she selected another plant.
"I've never considered Max's theories or opinions, mumbo."
"You don't live with him."
But on a sigh, Ripley crouched down beside Mia. There was a time, not so long before, when such a gesture would have come hard to her. It still took her a moment to find what she wanted to say and how she wanted to say it.
"Okay. Max, stupendously smart, and he's thorough, and 9 times out of 10 he's right, which is really irritating in the day-to-day course of things."
"You're crazy about him,"
Mia murmured.
"Well, sure. Sexiest geek on the planet, and all mine. But even the amazing Dr. Book has to miss sometimes. I just want to say I don't figure Sam Logan has to have anything to do with anything."
"Succinct and sentimental."
"Well, why the hell should he?"
Ripley lifted her hands, let them fall in frustration.
"You two had a thing when you were practically kids still, and it cut you up when he ended it. But you've been handling the way he came back, going about your business, and pretty much keeping your distance. You've blown him off, and lightning hasn't shot out of the sky."
"I'm going to sleep with him."
"So I say, chances are he's irrelevant to your part of the..."
"What? What?"
Ripley's mouth dropped open as she goggled.
"Sweet Jesus Christ!"
Even as Mia's lips twitched, Ripley leaped to her feet and headed into a full-blown rant.
"What are you thinking? Have you lost your mind? Sleep with him? You're going to give the guy sex as a reward for dumping you?"
All amusement fled. Carefully tugging off her gloves, Mia got slowly to her feet.
"I'm thinking I'm an adult and capable of making my own decisions. that I'm a single, healthy 30-year-old woman who is free to have a physical relationship with a single, healthy man.
It's not a man. It's Logan.
Perhaps you could shout just a little louder. I don't believe Mrs. Bigelow across the street heard you clearly.
Ripley set her teeth, rocked back on her heels. I gave you too much credit. I see that.
I figured you'd kick his ass one way or the other, then dust your hands off and walk away.
I don't know why I thought you had it in you. You never did.
What does that mean?
Just what I said. You want to cozy up with Sam, go right ahead. Don't look for me to pick up the pieces when he breaks you again.
Mia bent to set down her garden trowel. Even a controlled and civilized woman had to take care when she had a weapon in her hand.
You needn't worry. I've had experience in that area with you. You cut me off every bit as coldly, as completely as he did. Cut yourself off for 10 years from the gift we share and all its joys and responsibilities. Yet I still manage to join hands with you when it's necessary.
I didn't have a choice.
Convenient, isn't it? How when one devastates another, it's always because there wasn't a choice.
I couldn't help you.
You could have been there. I needed you to be there.
Mia said quietly and turned to go.
I couldn't.
Ripley took her arm, wrapped her fingers tight.
It's his goddamn fault. When he left you, all you did was bleed and I...
What?
Ripley dropped her hand.
I don't want to get into all this.
You kicked in the door, deputy. Have the guts to step through it.
Fine. Great.
She paced away, paced back. Temper still stained her cheeks, but her eyes were bleak.
You walked around like a zombie for weeks, barely functioning, like somebody who hadn't quite recovered and never would from some horrible illness.
It probably came from having my heart ripped out.
I know it, because I felt it too.
Fisting a hand, Ripley tapped it on her chest.
I felt what you felt. I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat, I could barely get out of bed most days. It was like dying from the inside out.
If you're talking about complete empathy, I've never...
Mia stammered.
I don't know what you call it, Ripley snapped. I experienced physically what you experienced, and I couldn't stand it. I wanted to do something, wanted you to do something. Pay him back, make him hurt. And the longer it went on, the more angry I got. If I was mad, they didn't hurt as much. I couldn't think past the fury.
She drew a breath.
I was standing outside, behind the house. Zack had just come in from a sale, minutes before. And all this rage just rose up. I thought about what I wanted to do, what I could do. It was inside me to do it. I pulled lightning out of the sky, a black bolt, and it struck the boat where Zack had just been. A few minutes earlier, and I might have killed him. I couldn't control it.
Ripley.
Shaken, appalled, Mia reached out to touch her arm.
It must have terrified you.
A few giant steps beyond terrified.
I wish you'd talk to me. I could have helped.
Mia, you couldn't even help yourself.
Sighing as the weight slid off her shoulders, Ripley shook her head.
And I couldn't take the chance of hurting someone. Couldn't handle the intimacy of my link with you. I knew if I told you, you'd talk me out of giving up the craft. I saw only one way out, and that was to pull back from you, from all of it, before I did something I couldn't take back.
I was furious with you, Mia countered.
Yeah,
Ripley sniffled, but she was only marginally embarrassed.
I got mad back, and it got easier. Maybe more comfortable for me to be at odds with you than it had been to be your friend.
Maybe it got easier for me, too.
It was difficult to admit after all the years when casting blame had helped soothe the hurt.
Sam was gone, but you were still here. Needling you whenever possible was some small satisfaction.
You were really good at it.
Well, with a little laugh, Mia brushed back her hair.
Just one of my little gifts.
I always loved you, even when I called you nasty names.
Tears threatened. A stone that had been in her heart for so long dissolved in an instant. She took the 2 steps that separated them, slid her arms around Ripley's waist, and held on, held tight.
Okay.
Mia's voice caught. Ripley patted her back.
Okay.
I missed you so much, so much.
I know.
Me too.
She let out an unsteady breath, then blinked when she saw Nell standing just outside the door, crying silently.
Sorry, I came out in the middle of that, and, well, by the time I decided whether I should mediate or just slip back inside, I was caught up.
She handed tissues all around.
I'd apologize for eavesdropping, but I'm just so happy.
What a trio, Ripley sniffled. Now I'm going to finish my rounds with red eyes. It's embarrassing.
For heaven's sakes, do a glamour and get rid of them.
Mia finished wiping her eyes, then closed them, murmured a chant. When she opened them again, they were sparkling and clear.
Always the show-off, Ripley muttered.
I still can't do it that quickly,
Nell began.
Do you think if I...
Let's not get into a damn coven here, Ripley waved a hand.
Since you're here, Nell, I need some weight. Get this, Mia's going to shag Sam.
You have such a way with words, Mia said. It never fails to impress me.
The point is, whatever you call it, it's a mistake.
Ripley gave Nell a little poke on the arm.
Tell her.
It's none of my business.
Cop out,
Ripley stated with a sneer.
To spare you from the insults and from biting your own tongue, I'll ask for your opinion.
Mia raised her eyebrows. If you have one on the subject.
My opinion is it's your decision, and if,
Nell continued over Ripley's snort,
you're considering going to bed with him, then you're still attracted enough for it to be an issue. You don't do things on impulse or recklessly. It seems to me that until you either get Sam out of your system or resolve your feelings, you'll be conflicted and unsettled.
Thank you. Now,
I'm not quite finished,
Nell told Mia, then cleared her throat.
Physical intimacy will resolve only one level of your conflict, and probably the easiest one. What happens after will depend on whether you open yourself or close yourself. That'll be your decision, too.
I'm considering it, finishing up old business. Until I do, I can't know clearly what step it is I'm meant to take.
Then just look, Ripley said impatiently. You were always a whiz with visions.
Don't you think I haven't tried?
Some of the pent-up frustration snapped out.
I can't see my own. I see her, standing on the cliffs, with the storm raging, the fog creeping. I feel her strength and her despair, and in that instant, before she jumps, she seems to reach out to me. I can't tell if it's to pass that last link to me or to pull me over with her.
Her eyes blurred and the air thickened.
Then I'm alone, and I feel the dark pressing in, close, tight, and so cold it seems the night should crack from it.
I know if I can get to the forest, to the clearing and the heart of the island, we'll make the circle, and that dark will break apart once and for all. But I don't know how to get there. You will.
Nell took her hand.
She was alone. You aren't, and never will be.
We haven't come this far to lose now.
Ripley took her other hand.
No.
Mia drew strength from the circle. She needed it. For even there, in the sunlight, with her sisters beside her, she felt alone in the dark. 6. A mist blanketed the island, as thin and luminous as the skin of a pearl. Trees and rocks rose up from it, humps and towers in a soft white sea. Mia left the house early. On the slope of her lawn, she stood for a moment, absorbing the serenity, the stillness that was the sisters on a lovely spring morning. Her spread of forsythia was a golden fan of color through the morning fog, her daffodils a band of sunny trumpets. She could smell her hyacinths, damp and sweet, It seemed to her that the earth was waiting to awaken, to throw off all memories of winter and burst into life. She could appreciate the sleepy before as much as she would the beauty of what was to come. She opened her car, her satchel of paperwork on the seat beside her, and started down the long and curving road to the village. There were several routine chores to deal with before the store opened. She enjoyed that, too, the relative quiet, the repetition, the freshening of stock, as much as she did the business hours with customers breezing in and out, lingering, browsing, and, of course, buying. She loved being surrounded by books, uncarting them, shelving them, designing displays. She loved the smell and the texture and the look of them, and the surprises uncovered when she flipped one open at random and saw the play of words on paper. The bookstore was more than a business to her. It was a deep and steady love, but she never forgot it was a business, one she ran efficiently and profitably. She'd come from money, and as a result, had never had to work for a living. She'd had to work for her own gratification, her own sense of ethics. Her financial base had allowed her to choose the course of her career and establish a business that reflected her interests. Those ethics and her own skills, effort, and shrewdness had made the business flourish. She was grateful, and always would be, for the Devlin money, but it was, to her mind, much more exciting and satisfying to make her own, and to risk her own. That was precisely what she would be doing by following through with Nell's idea. Expanding the cafe would change things. As much as Mia trusted and respected tradition and continuity, she was also a proponent of change, as long as the change was smart. And this one, she thought, as she wound her way through the mist, could be. Expanding the cafe could mean tucking in a more appealing and roomier event area. Her monthly book club was popular on the island, and the new cooking club already showed potential. The trick would be to make the best use of space and still maintain the intimacy the store was known for. But since Nell had planted the seed in her mind, the idea had taken hold. Mia could see exactly what she wanted and how it would be. When it came to Cafe Book, she knew precisely what she was doing. Too bad she wasn't quite as confident at the moment about the rest of her life. It was as if a curtain had been lowered dead center of her vision. She could see peripherally, but straight ahead was blocked. It worried her more than she was willing to admit. Behind the curtain were choices. She understood that. But how could she make the right one if she didn't know the options waiting for her? One of the choices was Sam Logan, but to what extent did she trust her instincts there, weighing them with logic and past history, balancing them against a primal sexual attraction that tended to cloud logic? A misstep with him could crush her a second time. She might not survive it whole. More, the wrong choice could doom the island she loved and was sworn to protect. Once, another woman had chosen death rather than bear the pain of loneliness and heartbreak. She had flung herself into the sea after the lover who had deserted her, and had woven the last threads of the web about three sisters. Hadn't she herself, by choosing to live, to find contentment, even to flourish, already countered that act? Nell had chosen courage, and Ripley true justice, and so their circle held. And she had chosen life. Perhaps the curse had already been broken, and the dark that hovered in wait around the island had already been banished. Even as the thought and the hope of it ran through her mind, the mist boiled up from the roadbed. A jagged lance of lightning crashed beside her car with an explosion of dirty red light and the stink of ozone. In the center of the road, an enormous black wolf snarled. Instinctively, she slammed on the brakes, jerked the wheel. The car skidded, spun, giving her a dizzying view of rocks, fog, and the dull glint of the guardrail that stood between the narrow edge of the road and the sheer drop to the sea. Fighting back the panic that gushed into her throat, she yanked the wheel again. The eyes of the wolf glowed like embers, and its teeth were long. On its muzzle was a white pentagram sliced through the black hide like a scar. Her mark, and her heart slammed painfully against her ribs at the sight of it.
Through the roar of blood in her head, over the scream of her own tires, she felt the cold of its breath on the back of her neck. She heard the sly, coaxing voice whispering in her mind.
Let go. Just let go and you won't be alone. It's so hard to be alone.
Tears blurred her vision. For a moment, her arms went weak, trembling as the urge to let it end nudged at her will. In that moment, she saw herself quite clearly, flying over the edge of the cliff. She bore down even as she struggled to control the car and pulled her power up from the gut.
Go back to hell, you son of a bitch!
As the wolf threw back its head to howl, she spun the car forward, punched the gas, and drove through it. She felt the shock, not from impact, but from the explosion of greed that pounded the air as her car rammed through the image. The fog lifted, and the mist, thin and pearly in the strengthening sun, sparkled over Three Sisters. Mia pulled over to the side of the road, laid her forehead on the wheel, and gave in to the shakes. Her own breathing was too loud in the closed car, so she fumbled for the window control. The cool, damp air and the steady chant of the sea revived her. Still, she closed her eyes, made herself sit back until she began to calm again.
Well, I guess that answers my question about this being over and done.
She inhaled, exhaled slowly, until her chest no longer hitched with every breath. Then, opening her eyes, she scanned the road behind her in the rearview mirror. Her tires had left wild, sinuous trails over the pavement, trails she noted with one quick shudder that had veered perilously close to the edge. The wolf was gone, and the mist was already as sheer as gauze.
An obvious ploy,
she said aloud for herself and whatever listened.
Black wolf, red eyes. Obvious and clichéd.
And, she thought, very, very effective. But he'd borne her mark, the mark she'd put on him when he'd worn another form. He hadn't been able to disguise it, and that gave her some comfort. Much needed comfort, she admitted, for the ambush had very nearly succeeded. She eased the car back on the road, and her hands had almost stopped trembling by the time she parked her car in front of Café Book. He'd been waiting for her. It had been easy enough to time his arrival at the hotel to match hers at the store. She wasn't like clockwork, Sam mused as he strolled across the street. But sometime between 8:45 and 9:15, she parked her pretty little car and unlocked the store. She wore one of her long, thin dresses today, the kind of dress that made a man want to offer thanks to the gods of spring. It was a soft, pale blue, the color of quiet pools skimmed fluid as water down her body. She wore sexy high-heeled sandals, hardly more than a series of buff-colored straps and a long, thin spike. He'd had no idea shoes could make the mouth water. She'd tied her hair back, his only complaint about her appearance that morning. He liked it best wild and loose, but the binding did leave an intriguing spill of red down the center of her back. He'd like to lay his lips there, beneath the spill of hair, beneath the soft, thin dress, and onto the smooth skin at the center of her back.
Good morning, gorgeous.
She jerked when he spoke and turned away from the door. His opening grin faded instantly, and his eyes went dark at the shock, still mirrored in hers.
What is it? What happened?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Damn it, her hands were going to shake again.
You startled me.
She angled her body enough to hide the tremor in her hand as she unlocked the door.
Sorry, Sam. No time for a neighborly chat. I have work.
Don't pull that on me.
He moved through the door with her before she could attempt to shut it and lock it in his face.
I know you.
No, you don't.
Her voice wanted to rise, and she refused to allow it. As casually as possible, she set her satchel on the front counter.
You don't know me.
I know when you're upset. Christ, Mia, you're shaking. Your hands are like ice,
he said as he snatched one and held it between his own.
Tell me what happened.
It's nothing.
She'd thought she was calm. She'd thought she was steady again. But her legs wanted to give. Pride made her lock them stiff.
Damn it, let me go.
He nearly did.
No, he decided, moving closer. I did that once. Let's try something new.
He scooped her off her feet. What the hell do you think you're doing?
You're cold and shaking. You need to sit down. Put on a little weight, haven't you?
She sent him one withering look. Oh, really?
It looks good on you.
He carried her to the sofa, set her down. He pulled the bright throw off the back and tucked it around her.
Now, tell me.
Don't sit on the...
She bit off a sigh because he'd already lowered himself to the coffee table facing her.
I see you never have figured out the difference between a table and a chair.
They're both in the furniture family. There. You've got some color coming back. Good thing I came along to annoy you.
Just my lucky day.
He took her hand again, warming it in his. What scared you, baby?
Don't call me that.
He had only used that term, she remembered, when he was being particularly sweet. She let her head rest back against the cushions.
It's just... I had a near miss on the drive down. A dog jumped out in the road. The roads were damp with the mist, and I skidded.
His grip tightened on hers. I don't think so.
Why would I lie?
I don't know. He held on until she stopped trying to pull her hand free. But something's off. I imagine I could find out for myself if I took a drive up the coast road.
Don't!
Fear grabbed her by the throat so that the single word was thin and urgent.
Don't! She repeated with more control. It isn't for you. But at this point I can't be sure it won't take what it can get. Let go of my hand and... I'll tell you.
Tell me, he countered, knowing the value of the link, and I'll let go of your hand.
All right, she managed after a vicious internal struggle. Your way this time.
She told him, sparing none of the details, but keeping her tone even, almost conversational. Even so, she saw his expression change. Why aren't you wearing protection? He demanded.
I am.
She lifted the trio of crystals dangling from a star-shaped pendant.
It wasn't enough. He's strong. He's had 3 centuries to gather his forces, nurse his powers. Even so, he couldn't cause me real harm. He can only play tricks.
This trick might have caused you to have an accident. You were probably driving too fast.
Please, you'll force me to pull out the old pot calling the kettle.
I didn't nearly drive off a cliff. He pushed to his feet, paced away the terrifying image of Mia doing exactly that. He hadn't anticipated this kind of direct, frontal attack on her, and, he thought, neither had she. Confidence in their own powers, he realized, had blindsided them.
You'd have taken extra precautions with your home.
I protect what's mine.
You neglected your car.
He said, tossing a look over his shoulder and having the satisfaction of seeing her flush.
I certainly did not neglect it. I have the standard...